Hi, we're Sonic Cereal. Thank you for joining us. This is a very special episode about A Clockwork Orange, the soundtrack. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Mark. And in this podcast, we take a deep dive into some of our favorite artists track by track. All right, so tell us a little bit about the film.
Well, it premiered in December 19, 1971.
We should really be introducing the book first.
Yeah, because she gets all the credit.
The film gets all the credit.
Yes.
Okay, book. So this was first a book by
Anthony Burgess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or Burgess, I don't know.
Burgess.
And he was a science fiction.
No, I don't know. Fiction. Whatever. He was a writer. You get the idea.
Yeah, and he his wife was raped.
Mm-hmm.
And so he. My God. And so he had this. He felt like he needed to.
He was fixated on the issue, and he just needed to, like.
He needed catharsis.
Yeah,
catharsis. And he wrote the book in part to deal with kind of that, like, violence.
Yeah, and it's like maybe he felt he wanted to be violent himself and retaliate.
Anyway, he's a brilliant writer, and he wrote this film.
Mm-hmm.
Or he wrote this book. And. He was commissioned to actually write the script by,
I don't know.
By Kubrick.
Yeah.
So anyway, Kubrick was like, hey, we need a script for this. And he wrote it. And then Kubrick was like, this sucks. And so he ended up filming the movie just using the book.
Mm.
So he didn't have a script. He would just open to like page 23 and be like, all right, this is what we're filming today.
I did not know that.
Anyway, when did it premiere,
this film? Well, in the UK, it was released in January 1972. And then in the United States, a month later. What are you going to do?
And how did it do in the box office?
Its budget was approximately $1.3 million, but the box office gross, it grossed over $26 million in the U.S. and Canada. So
the $1.3 million budget, it was Kubrick's lowest budget film.
Mm-hmm.
And when he showed his, you know, like the people that he was working with what the budget was, they were like, are you shitting me?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Peanuts.
But he ended up making it on budget.
Good for him. And it got awarded and nominated at the Academy Award. I guess it didn't get any awards, but it was only nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, Best Film Editing. And then at the Golden Globes, it was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Actor, Malcolm McDowell.
That's great. It sucks it didn't win.
Nah, it's probably because of the controversy and the violence and all that.
I'm sure. And what about the soundtrack? Because that's what we're really here to talk about.
Well, it was released in 1972.
On what label?
It was Warner Bros. Label Records.
Warner Brothers. And it was produced by Stanley Kubrick and Wendy Carlos.
Yeah.
Give us some trivia. Give us...
What do you want? You want a box office performance? So,
we already talked about that.
Yeah, we did.
All right, so this album, this soundtrack has 16 songs. Wait, yeah. 13 songs.
I think it's got like two versions. I don't know.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right, so...
Hey, I wanted to ask you, did you remember the first time you saw this movie? Or the first time you heard the soundtrack?
Yeah, I mean, I saw it together, but I was a little kid. I was like 11, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched this, and I loved it, and I was like blown out of my mind. And I was already, even as a kid, a little bit into like architecture and stuff like that, and so like the design of the film and the look and feel of it just like blew me away. And then I really liked the, what are they, what's the name of it, the Russian Cockney language that
Burgess like made up, a mix of Russian and Cockney.
So I really liked that. It, like, somehow it was really exciting to hear that language, because I always liked having like secret languages with my brother.
That's cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I really liked it, and it was like the first time in my life that I had been both like disturbed and excited. That's all.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what about you?
Oh, I think I was also 11 when I first saw it.
Oh.
I think my uncle had it on DVD, and my brother and I were just bored, and we were watching movies, and we were like, let's check this one out. And I think I've always been intrigued by the cover. I thought it was like a horror. I thought it was a slasher at first, because you see the guy.
Yeah, with a knife.
Yeah, with the knife. And I was like, why do I always see this poster everywhere? And it's like, and he has an eyeball in his hand too. And so I thought, this guy cuts out eyeballs. So I thought,
somebody should remake a version of it.
And then I was watching that.
Oh, part two. That would be part two. So everybody goes through the Clockwork Orange
thing. Oh, yeah. With the eyeballs.
Yes. But everyone goes through that, and then part two is like somebody's out there cutting out everyone's eyeballs so that they don't have to deal with the horror of seeing that conversion therapy.
Yeah. Well, did you know Stanley Kubrick was heavily involved in selecting and integrating music into his films?
Yes, in general, and particularly this one.
Yeah, so he wanted a full orchestral score, but he changed direction after hearing Carlos's Switched on Bach.
And Carlos is Wendy Carlos.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about her?
She was one of the pioneers of electronic music, and she worked with Kubrick on a few films. I think she also did The Shining.
What about her personal life?
I don't know.
She was one of the first openly trans...
That's right.
...producers and musicians.
Yes.
Which is cool. Okay. I also... We were watching a thing on the film, and people on staff were saying that Kubrick was really receptive to getting feedback. Like, Singing in the Rain was something that was improvised by...
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah. Anyway, he would ask everybody, like, the door guy
and
for feedback.
For ideas.
And ideas.
Like, that's... Really, I gotta give it to him, because I feel like a lot of people... Or narcissistic.
Okay.
And they think their ideas are the way and the only way. And they're not as open to, like, feedback unless it's from, like, another close creative. And to just let, like, anyone who is within physical proximity... be in charge of, be open to those ideas. It's cool.
Yeah. I thought so. I feel like I would be that. I would want to be that kind of director. You know, because it's like...
Well, when I heard that, I was thinking about all the times I've been an extra on set, and I'm like, this movie would be better if they did that or changed that. But I was just like, I'm just going to keep it. Because I feel like if I said that to the director, they would get mad at me and be like, get the hell out.
Probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe you'd find a director like
that. And I'll be like, you know, like, Stanley Kubrick, you didn't know this, but Stanley Kubrick took ideas even from the doorman, so you're lost. Yeah.
And they'd be changed forever.
Uh-huh.
Okay, for those unfamiliar with the film, it's a dystopian crime film that was that follows this character named Alex DeLarge, who's mm-hmm. a delinquent in the kind of near future, and he's obsessed with violence and Beethoven.
Yeah.
And he's got it like a gang.
Yeah, and the story takes a dark turn when Alex is arrested and subjected to the Ludovico technique, which is an experimental therapy meant to condition him against violent impulses. It's brutal look at morality, free will, and what it means to be human. It's really great.
Okay, so what about some trivia?
Well, Kubrick asked the actors to overreact and over-exaggerate their facial expressions as if they were on a Broadway stage, which added to the unsettling feeling. I can see that.
That's good direction. It's like simple, but probably...
Can you do that?
What?
I want you to overact and over-exaggerate your facial expressions as if you were on a Broadway stage.
Yeah, I can do it.
Show me.
No.
Don't be a wimp.
I'll show you later.
Okay, in the bedroom.
Oh, God. All right. And obviously, the music plays a huge role. We talked about Wendy Carlos. And when the film came out, it sparked a lot of controversy. And Stanley Kubrick even pulled it from UK theaters because people... It was being reported that it was inspiring crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can turn your mic off when you're chomping away.
Well, despite all that, it's a
pop culture
landmark. And you see references to this movie everywhere. I'm talking about music videos, fashion, art, everywhere. I'm not joking.
And in 1995, Blur did a sort of tribute to the film in their music video, The Universal, where it takes place in a bar that looks like the Corova Milk Bar, which is one of the, like, iconic sets from the film.
Looks fun.
Yeah.
That's what I always thought speakeasies would be like.
I see that. Why isn't there one?
Yeah, I'm telling you. Okay. In the 1999 music video for Shihad's Pacifier, it also makes a reference to the milk bar and driving scenes.
Who's Shihad?
I don't know. We'll check it out.
Okay, let's take a listen. In 2001, Rob Zombie's music video for Never Gonna Stop, The Red Groovy, was inspired by the driving scene that I really like.
Yeah.
Also, that I loved that driving scene when I was a kid. It was like...
All right, then. Everything. Well, can you tell us with the cars?
I can't remember.
No?
No.
Okay, well, I'll tell you.
Okay.
It's an Adams Probe 16. Thank you very much.
Who made it?
Adam.
Adam made it.
Yes, there's a bar in Rome called Latte Più, which is inspired by the bar that we were talking about.
Why don't we go?
Let's go.
Okay.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, we should go. In 2011, Rihanna wore an outfit inspired by the film for her music video, You Do One.
Yeah, and also the band Arctic Monkeys titled their fourth album Suckin' in C after the graffiti scene in the film. Yeah. So for fashion, designer KTZ's Fall Winter collection was inspired by the film with obvious reference to the bowler hats.
So it was in Madonna's, one of her tours, she has like the Jean-Paul Gaultier strap thing with the bowler hat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, designer Jun Takahashi's Fall-Winter 2019 collection for Undercover was inspired by Clockwork Orange, which included bowler hats and photos from the film on the clothes. That sounds cool.
The we were watching something that the costume designer was saying that, because Kubrick really liked the idea of having a bowler hat on him, and the costume designer said, you know, London's going to take this personally. Like,
really?
The UK is going to take this personally if you do, because then it's really going to identify it as a UK.
A really English thing.
Yeah.
But,
And he was like, I like that.
That's like good. Republicans wearing MAGA hats and American flag boxers, you know. It's just,
I got the train of thought.
Thank you. You have to be in my mind.
In 2023, Gucci released a campaign called The Exquisite.
Exquisite Gucci campaign.
That references several Kubrick films, including some recreated scenes from A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, it was
we
really
saw
cool.
that. It was cool.
Yeah.
They really went all out for the sets.
Yeah, that would be fun. I would love to be on a Stanley Kubrick set. I feel like there should be a motel based on his films. That would be in different rooms, would be like different films.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's my idea. I thought of it first.
And the films Reservoir Dogs and Trainspotting were inspired, definitely had Clockwork Orange inspiration.
Yes. And
what about the music?
Well, the songs have, there's many songs that have been influenced by this film. And that includes Looking Down the Barrel of a Gun by the Beastie Boys and Suffragette City by David Bowie. I had to be honest, I don't know any of these songs. Do you know them?
I know the Beastie Boys song. I don't know that David Bowie song.
Okay.
But let's listen to clips of them.
Sure.
A little bit of trivia. So, unlike some of his other films, A Clockwork Orange was made, well, we talked about this, on a very small budget.
So many times are you going to reference that? You're really obsessed with the budget. Always has money on the mind, this one. And also, the film was banned in Spain by dictator Francisco Franco.
I can't imagine it's still banned there, but that's interesting.
Yeah.
I'll ask my coworkers if it's banned in Spain.
Okay. Yeah, I asked their relationship to it growing up.
Oh.
You should have done that.
We should
prior
have invited
to this
yeah.
podcast, but
all right. Let's talk about what stands out. Despite the amazing cinematography and visuals.
The soundtrack.
Yes.
Duh.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit about Wendy Carlos.
Yeah, it's the work of Wendy Carlos, a genuine pioneer of electronic music, like I said. Her 1968 album, Switched On, Bach, reimagined Bach's compositions with a Moog synthesizer, and basically made electronic music a thing, so you can just dill.
Let's take a listen.
Well, Wendy Carlos transitioned in the late 60s, and that's pretty innovative as well. Making electronic, she was a very forward thinker. And she was the first openly transgendered public figure in the arts. She underwent her gender confirmation surgery in 1972, a year after the film's released, which is why the music is sometimes credited to Walter Carlos. So
she said that she was scared to go out as like dressed as a woman.
Yeah.
So she would dress in like male drag for appearances to promote the film.
That's cool.
Yeah. In a 1979 Playboy interview, she said that that the secrecy really affected her career and that she lost a whole decade trying to avoid live performances.
Oh, well, I'm sure she's happy now.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, Stanley Kubrick originally wanted Ennio Morricone to do the music after hearing his score for Investigation of a Citizen Above Suspicion in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was that Kubrick called Sergio. No, he. Who did he call?
Sergio Leone, the director.
Yeah, Sergio Leone. To ask if Morricone was free. But Leone said Morricone was still working on my film. And so he was like, oh, okay. But the truth was that they were actually just in the mixing stages. And Morricone could have easily worked with Kubrick. And after the call, Kubrick just gave up without even telling him. So that's sad.
Yeah, but then we got Wendy Carlos instead.
Okay. But I'm curious what...
Yeah.
Yeah, that might have sounded like... So, Morricone said later that this was the only occasion he regretted not working with someone.
Mm.
I feel that.
Oh, yeah? Who've you turned down?
It's a secret.
Tell us your thoughts about the kind of, like, synthesized classical music thing. Like, Wendy Carlos's kind of shtick.
Well, I mean... It's kind of unsettling, like the movie. And I feel like the synthesized classical music is like taking something elitist and historical and sophisticated and pure and corrupting it or modernizing it in the way that the film is sort of a commentary on how violence and sex is more prevalent in modern society. You know what I mean? Anyway, it's a mix of original compositions and electronic interpretations of classical pieces. So let's break down some of the key tracks.
All right, so track one, it's called Title Music from A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, this is adapted from Henry Purcell's... Music for the Funeral of a Queen Mary.
Of a Queen Mary?
We all know one. It's 1695.
And it was originally a somber orchestral piece for a royal funeral.
So why do you think they chose funeral music to introduce the characters? Because they're just like, they're a lost cause, they're dead. Thank you very much. Anyway, Wendy Carlos transformed it using a Moog synthesizer, giving it an eerie, futuristic vibe. I respect that. I would like to hear a lot of classical music, electronic, synthesized, whatever, ambient. Give it to me.
And so this opens the film, and it really sets the tone, this kind of somber, cold, and really futuristic.
Yeah.
Vibe to it.
So the author of the original novel, Anthony Burgess,
that we've talked about,
disliked popular music. So he made the character Alex dislike popular music as well. And in the novel, he calls it twanging nonsense. Sounds like something Tom York would say.
About something, I could see that. Okay, track two is The Thieving Magpie. And it runs 5 minutes and 57 seconds.
It's a silly song. Sounds funny. Yeah. I'd say it's comical in tone.
And it's basically La Gaza Ladra, or The Thieving Magpie by Rossini, which was from 1817.
Yeah, and it was used in its original orchestral form, unedited for the film. So this one was an electronic like the other ones.
And this scene, the song accompanies a scene... which is the chaotic brawl between Alex and his droogs, kind of like when they, like, go against each other.
Yeah.
And he cuts the guy's hand.
Did you know the iconic look of Alex and his droogs, including the cod pieces and bowler hats, was largely improvised by Malcolm McDowell?
See? Stanley Kubrick's just taken
everyone's ideas.
Perspectives.
And he's taking all the credit.
No, he didn't.
Okay. Well, McDowell suggested wearing the cricket protector as part of the outfit.
That's like the codpiece thing.
Which Kubrick loved.
Yeah.
Cricket protector.
Song. Okay. song 3 theme from A Clockwork Orange, Beethovenia.
Beethovenia.
Which is a minute and 48. Tell us about the history.
It was inspired by Beethoven's works, particularly the Ninth Symphony.
And for it, Wendy Carlos created this original composition as an homage to Beethoven, which blends classical sounds with synthesizers.
Yeah. And it serves as a recurring motif symbolizing Alex's obsession with Beethoven and his warped sense of beauty.
Do you like Beethoven?
Yeah.
The film or the movie or the composer?
You know, I haven't seen the movie in a really long time, so that would be cool. But I like some of the pieces by the composer. I like his slower, somber ones, like the piano piece, Symphony Pathétique.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, we got the fourth track, which is the Ninth
Symphony,
also by Beethoven, and it's the second movement, Abridged. Thank you very much.
And, yeah, this is from Beethoven's Ninth Symphony from 1824. And this movement is both lively and dramatic.
Yeah, here it's rendered electronically by Carlos to emphasize its dissonant and distorted qualities.
She does a good job.
Yes, she does. And it highlights Alex's love for Ludwig van and underscores scenes reflecting his complex personality and its depth and irony.
That song's carrying a lot of weight.
Yeah.
It's communicating a lot.
Malcolm McDowell, sorry. Improvised a lot of the humor in the film because he felt like the film was really a dark comedy. And even though Stanley Kubrick never mentioned on the meaning, his leaving in the improvisation is telling. You know? What's the next track?
Track 5, March from a Clockwork Orange, Ninth Symphony, Fourth Movement, Abridged.
How come I didn't get any cherries?
You ate them all.
Well, this is Beethoven's iconic choral finale, and it celebrates it was written to celebrate universal brotherhood. And it was based on Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, and it's one of the first pieces of music to use a vocoder. This technique gave the choir an eerie robotic quality, which has since influenced many, many electronic and pop artists. Do you know anything about this song?
Wait, we're on 5?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kubrick was one of the first directors to use Dolby sound technology to create immersive audio effects.
And we're still talking about it today.
Still talking about it. It's still... Man, he was really...
Yeah.
Forward-looking.
Yeah.
Prescient.
One of the greats.
And this piece, along with Wendy Carlos's Time Steps, was recorded long before the film was made.
Oh, yeah. And the vocoder was a development from an earlier unsuccessful voice synthesis method she used in the 1969 album, The Well-Tempered Synthesizer. Funny?
No.
The Well-Tempered Synthesizer. What do you want? Okay. Anyway.
No time for the old in and out, love. I've just come to read the meter.
Okay.
Okay, what's next?
William, track 6, William Tell Overture, Abridged.
which is a minute and 20 seconds. And this is Rossini's famous overture from 1829, and it's often associated with lighthearted or fast-paced scenes.
Yeah, and again, it's used in its original orchestral form for comedic effect.
And in the film, it accompanies the really sped-up sex scene, which adds this a layer of satire.
I remember that.
We just watched it.
This has been in a lot of films and TV shows, including Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Okay. And Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Why are you so skeptical about the first one?
I don't know. I know. I forgot what that was, and I remembered.
Oh.
It's a good movie.
Yeah. And Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist.
7.
And The Beverly Hillbillies.
Your favorite.
Song 7 is Pomp and Circumstance, March number 1, which runs 4 minutes and 30. What?
Nothing. Finish.
4 minutes and 35 seconds. What?
And nothing.
Did I say March wrong or something?
Anyway, this is Edward Elgar's 1901 March. And it's often used in ceremonial contexts like graduations. You may have heard it before.
Let's take a listen. Okay.
Did you have that played at your graduation?
No. We had like, I don't know.
Oh, Janet Jackson.
No. I can't remember.
Sound of Music?
No, it was like John Fogerty or something.
What?
And Pink Floyd.
Well, don't worry. They sang the Rent song at my graduation, which is weird.
So much.
Yeah.
This was... Also, it's also used in TV shows and films like The Crown, Kingsman, and Lizzie McGuire movie. And Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Okay. Song 8, Pomp and Circumstance.
March number 4?
Which runs a minute and 38 seconds. And this is another movement from Elgar's ceremonial marches, but it's less commonly used.
Yeah, and it maintains its traditional orchestration. It's associated.
I'm glad you got that out.
With Alex's new life post conditioning, symbolizing control and manipulation.
T. Song number 9 is Time Steps, and it's an excerpt at 4 minutes and 18 seconds.
Yeah, this was originally a composition by Wendy Carlos. It was experimental and atmospheric.
And it was created using a multi-layered Moog synthesizer.
Yeah, and it acts as a prelude to the Ludovico technique scenes, building tension.
It's funny how the colors of the real world only seem really real when you video them on a screen.
You know, he cut his eye during that scene.
Yeah, that's messed up.
Because he got so, like, it caused him so much anxiety to have his eyes propped open for so long that he, like, just kind of pulled his hands out of the...
No, believe me, I hate putting eye drops in, you know...
And Wait. Then he, like, brushed against it with his hand when he took it out of the straitjacket. And, yeah.
Had that hurt. Have you ever...
Yeah, with a guitar string.
You did?
Yeah.
Did it hurt?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll move on. Well, this Time Steps was recorded as a test of the new voice synthesis device, and... Wendy Carlos decided to use it for A Clockwork Orange. She said, this piece, along with the March song, was recorded at half speed.
7.5.
IPS? I don't know. And then she played it back.
It's what? Something per second. What's the I? Instance? If you don't know it off the top of your head, you're
not gonna remember. I don't know. I'm sorry.
So it was recorded at half speed and then played back at double the IPS, just because she couldn't play a monophonic keyboard at full standard tempo.
What a noob. Everyone can do that.
Okay. Track 10, Overture to the Sun, a minute and 46 yes. seconds.
This was written by Terry Tucker, a contemporary composer for the film.
And it features a harpsichord evoking an old world yet surreal mode.
Yeah, and so it plays in the scene at the writer's house, amplifying the unsettling atmosphere. And this is a pop version of a track from the psychedelic band's Sun Forest, and it's their only album.
Oh, what was it called?
No, the band is Sun Forest, and their only album is called Sound of Sun Forest.
Groundbreaking.
Tell you what. SOS. You better respect.
Track 11 is... Oh, did you have more to say?
No.
Okay, track 11 is out. We're almost there. Is I Want to Marry a Lighthouse Keeper at a minute and 3 seconds.
Yeah, it's a whimsical 1960s novelty song by Erica L. Agin. Agin. And it's Egan? Left unchanged from its original recording.
For comedic and satiric effect.
Yeah, it's used in a ironically lighthearted moment, contrasting Alex's darker nature. It's his parents are listening to that song and they're just reading the paper on the couch.
When he comes in.
Yeah.
I want to marry a lighthouse keeper and live by the side of the sea. I'll polish his lamps by the light of day so the ships at night can find their way.
They're just chilling. That's what they listen to. Okay.
Do you like this song?
Yeah, I like this one. It's dope. And it was also used in the 2014 film Frank with Maggie Gyllenhaal on the vocals.
Did
surprise,
you see
surprise.
It?
Frank?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it. I like it, film.
Okay.
A lighthouse keeper and keep him company.
And then song 12, the iconic Singing in the Rain at 2 minutes and 38 seconds.
Yeah, it's the last song. And it was written by Arthur Freed and Nacio Herb Brown in 1929. And it was made famous by Gene Kelly in the 1952 musical.
Have you seen that?
Yes. So I guess it wasn't Gene Kelly. It wasn't made for the movie.
No.
It was written previously.
But Gene Kelly was known for it, so I think they were saying...
That's like how Bjork is known for It's Oh So Quiet. She didn't write it, though.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
But was it recorded before?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's play it now.
Play what?
How's it used in the film?
Unaltered. Well, no. I mean, there's a few instances where Alex, the character, the main character, is singing the song. And then at the very end, that's when you hear the... Okay. Happy New Year. Yeah, at the very end, that's when you finally hear the original recording. So it's cute.
Yeah.
Singing in the rain. You're singing in the rain. What a glorious feel. And I'm happy again.
Yeah, like I was saying, it's sung by Alex during the violent crime, the violent home invasion scene, creating one of the most disturbing juxtapositions in cinema history.
And this song's also been in films and TV shows like Babylon, Friends, and The Muppet Show, my favorite.
Hell yeah. Did you know this song made its way into the film because Kubrick said he felt the home invasion scene was too stiff or generic or whatever. So Malcolm McDowell started singing in the Rain, and Kubrick loved it.
Glorious feet.
He loved it. That same night, he bought the rights to the song for $10,000, approximately, which is about $76,500.
That's what you say? $76,000?
What? $76,500. That's okay. A lot of money.
Then many years later, apparently McDowell ran into Gene Kelly at a party, and Gene Kelly was not happy.
Yeah. He turned and walked away in disgust.
Mm.
He was deeply upset.
Whatever.
Get over it.
It's art.
Yeah, I don't care.
Have you seen Twisted Nerve?
Yeah. What about it?
I don't know, you tell me.
Random. Well, I guess because the way he whistles the song in Twisted Nerve, it's kind of reminiscent of the way Alex sings Singing in the Rain. Yeah.
Hello?
Walter Carr. What?
I just want to make sure my mic is on.
It's on. Wendy Carlos has an album called Walter Carlos's A Clockwork Orange, which contains unreleased music made for the film.
I want to listen to that.
Yeah, there's a track called Country Lane that references Singing in the Rain. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, can we?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
And this song was remixed by Mint Royale and references. It's referenced by Biz Markie. Okay. Tell me about the themes and symbolism in this. Symbolism.
To me, what's groundbreaking about the soundtrack is how it mixes. We've talked about this.
Talk.
Classical and electronic music. Yeah.
All right.
But it's one of the first films that really, like, went there from that, like, musical perspective.
Yeah. It's like a Sofia Coppola inspiration. I'm sure she's been inspired by this film. I see some of it in her films. Yeah, it's one of the first films to use juxtaposition of tone to create unsettling atmosphere. I feel like I've seen this in a bunch of things, but I just can't put my finger on it.
And what do you associate people who like to listen to this song with?
What song?
Singing in the Rain.
We're not talking about Singing in the Rain anymore. Boo. Anyway. Yeah, so Beethoven, his music is known for passion and elegance, but in Alex's hands, it gets twisted into something dark and violent.
And it's such a cool way to show who he is.
Yeah, I think this is why I associate people who listen to show tunes and jovial classical music with psychopaths. But you know what? when I was flying back on British Airways, they play like this classical music in the plane. And I'm like, this is not what I need right now. Like, I'm already agitated and stressed out. And I was like, this is just adding insult to injury. And that's like the same music in my old neighborhood where they used to like play it outside of drugstores to like not have people loiter or homeless sleep out in front of the store. So it's like torture music.
Well, that's why it fits so well in the film.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would say the music is a huge part of how you experience the story. Without the score, the movie would hit different. Yeah.
Stanley Kubrick has famously refused to provide a clear moral stance or explanation for the film.
It's good.
Yeah. Because he said he believed the ambiguity was essential, letting the audience kind of make sense of the film's themes. Like, he didn't want to, like, explain it.
Yeah. Did you know that Mick Jagger was considered for the role of Alex and the Rolling Stones were going to be the rest of the...
I learned that today.
Yeah. And then at another point, the Beatles were going to do the music before it got in the hands of Stanley Kubrick.
Good thing.
Yeah. This would have been a joke. And... yeah.
Or like a weird, like, fish thing.
Also, Stanley Kubrick asked Pink Floyd if he could use their song Atom Heart Mother Sweet in the soundtrack. But he was denied due to him wanting unlimited license to determine what portions or edit of the song he used. So...
You lost out.
Yeah.
Who lost out? Pink Floyd.
They lost out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
tell us about...
Never mind.
Come on.
I was just going to say, they've become such an iconic and successful band anyway, so I don't think they really care.
I don't know. I still think it's such a cool... cool film to be associated.
Associated. Okay. Well, tell me about the... I'm going to tell you about the legacy of the soundtrack.
Do tell.
So, Wendy Carlos's work on the soundtrack was revolutionary. She showed that electronic music could just be as expressive as traditional orchestration.
And it's influenced so many film scores, especially sci-fi and dystopian genres like Blade Runner and Tron. And you can really hear...
Well, she did the music for Tron, didn't she?
Oh, I don't know. I know it sounds like it. I didn't know she did Tron.
Okay. Yeah, she did it.
Okay.
Okay. And outside of the film, her music...
Anything else you don't like about me?
Yeah, her music inspired electronic artists across genres from synth pop to ambient. And myself, I guess I would say. I don't know.
Do you recognize the sound system that Alex has in the film? The one that he plays?
I thought that said... it's a transcriptor's hydraulic reference turntable. It's cool.
There's also a Bang & Olufsen Beomaster 5000 FM tuner. Super cool.
All right.
And a BO Lab 5000 amplifier. We saw both of those at the museum.
Yeah, I was going to say. It looks familiar.
Okay.
The cassette player, though, is a prop. And it is shown to use Philips' mini cassette system, the Deutsche Grammophon Beethoven and Polydor goggle tapes.
Those are all bands.
Yeah, those are also props.
I know, but those names, it's tapes with names on them, and they're names of bands.
Yeah, so the mini cassette system was of low quality, intended for dictation only, and was never used for commercial music releases. My mom used to have one of those.
What would she...
My mom or your mom?
Not my mom.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that too...
No, but it's a random thing for somebody to have, like, walking around with a little mini cassette player. They're like...
Oh, yeah, yeah, my mom... I think because my mom would use it for notes.
Yeah, because...
And, yeah, my brother and I found it, and we would just use it for jokes. Stop doing that. Let's keep doing
that. Anyway. Tell me a joke that was on there. Like, trilogies or Lifeline and call your brother.
Right now.
It's only 9:45.
I don't know.
Tell us about other influences.
Well, the impact is still felt today. It's a perfect example of music transcending its original context.
And artists like Lady Gaga have used the theme to open her shows.
Yeah, and just recently I got a vinyl with some classical music, but it's played on the synthesizer.
Oh, we bought that in...
Yeah, it's very Clockwork Orange.
Did we buy that in?
Vinyl Dreams in San Francisco.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's right. We didn't buy albums in Spain because we'd have to bring them back.
Yeah, it's hard.
They get all crushed.
Yeah. We learned that the hard way in Milan. Sad story.
All right, and some trivia. Stanley Kubrick was amused by the countless parodies of A Clockwork Orange, from references in The Simpsons to music videos by artists like Blur, and he saw these as a testament to the film's cultural impact.
Yeah, and Singing in the Rain and classical works are used in a perverse way and appropriate.
We've already talked about that. That's why I skipped it.
All right. Well, I was just thinking because American Psycho comes to mind, the way they use Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of within the same vein. And then I think the director was probably got to be influenced by that.
And it's cool that Stanley Kubrick was, like, he thought it was interesting and cool as opposed to being, like, feeling like people were making
like,
fun of him.
Like, what the hell are you doing?
Or being like, they're making fun of me.
Yeah.
Okay, give me your closing thoughts.
What would you have done in that situation? What, like, if a director today told you to, like, sing a song and dance?
What song would I pick?
Yeah.
Man, that's tough. What would you pick?
Britney Spears. Can you imagine?
No. What song would you really pick if you were in a film and... the director's like, pick a song. I know it's
Oh, it would be like Karen Carpenter, Why Do Birds Suddenly Appear? I don't know, that's what comes to mind.
Yeah.
It's like, it would be like a Joker, like the way he, I forget what songs he references in the film, but.
Mine would probably be Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock.
What? Okay.
If I like, sing a song, you know, like It Takes Two or one of those
songs. I gotta just imagine. You would do the rap part too.
Yeah.
That would be disturbing, actually. That would be really scary.
What's your favorite track from this album? The soundtrack?
I'd have to say the march from A Clockwork Orange, Ninth Symphony, the Fourth Movement, Abridged. And the track is by Wendy Carlos. So it reminds me, speaking of SFMOMA, of the singing wooden robots, mini bots.
Yeah.
We saw at MoMA. What about you?
I'm going to go with the same thing.
Oh.
The march from A Clockwork Orange. I feel like the vocoder effect was really cool and ahead of its time.
Wow, original.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't care if you're being sarcastic. Okay, a little bit of trivia before we go. In 2000, this album was reissued with bonus tracks under the title A Clockwork Orange, Wendy Carlos's Complete Original Score. We should listen to that.
Yeah, let's listen to it right now.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay. No.
Well, the author of the original novel, Anthony Burgess.
We've introduced him like four times. Hey. Like, it's the first time we're saying anything.
All right, well, Anthony... All right, he was also a composer, and he adapted the novel into a stage musical called Clockwork Orange, A Play With Music. I don't really like it.
You saw it?
No, but I saw videos on YouTube, okay. And I was just like, what are you doing?
And the first performance was in West Germany in 1988, with music by Die Toten Hosen.
Did an expanded version called A Clockwork Orange 2004 was performed by the Royal Shakespeare Company in 1990 with music by Bono and The Edge. Wow.
We were just talking about how annoying it was that U2 was preloaded on iPods.
Yeah, that wasn't very nice.
No.
You should never do that as an artist. Be like, have my stuff whether you like it or not. Shame on you.
I know. The play was first presented with Burgess's own songs.
What's that matter? Yeah, it was in a 2000 production at the Fabulous and Ridiculous Theater in Austin, Texas. It was directed by Anna Catherine Rutledge. Remember Have you been to that theater?
No, but we went to Austin.
Yes, we did.
It was hot.
It sure was. Anyway, I'm still stuck on U2 giving us their music.
Oh.
Well, I was just thinking, like, that's if you're trying to sell music, like those people on Venice Beach who, like, hey, you want my CD? $5, blah, blah, blah. But it's just like they're like just going around opening people's purses and sticking the CD in. You know what I mean?
Even if somebody gave me something for free, I'd feel like I don't want that waste, you know?
Yeah, like I would just immediately throw it in the trash. It's like, no, thank you. That's rude.
But you couldn't delete it. That was what was annoying. It was just there.
So that's like someone sticking gum or someone burning your face.
God.
Because it's permanent. It's like, here, something to remember me by, whether you like it or not. That's awful.
It's like you always had to wear the same shirt.
Yeah.
Every day, no matter what else
it's
you wore.
A scar. Anyway.
I'm glad someone else was impacted as much by it as I was.
I still see it to this day. And I'm like, what is this song?
Okay. So let's wrap this up. This film and score have it all.
Yeah, dystopian themes.
Beethoven.
Blasies.
Synthesizers.
Chumble.
Which is?
Chatter and mumble.
Rape.
Cool cars.
Amazing interiors.
Unethical human experimentation.
Mean girls fashion.
Eggy wigs.
Drug-laced milk.
Ultraviolet.
Jammy wang.
Wigs.
Snakes.
And some of the most unforgettable uses of music ever in film, so
for sure. Well, that is it for this week. We hope you enjoyed this look at A Clockwork Orange, the soundtrack. And if you haven't seen the film or listened to the full score, now's a great time.
Yeah, promotion.
What about next episode?
Let's see. What do we do?
We'll be back to albums, right?
Air?
Yeah. You tell me.
Yeah, we're gonna
do... This is your...
We're gonna do another Air album, and it's the last Air album, so just calm down.
And after that, maybe we'll do another soundtrack.
Yeah.
Like Kill Bill.
Like Kill Bill.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.